Welcome to today's deep dive. We're jumping into something that I think, honestly, affects every single one of us.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I'm really excited to dig into this one with you.
Right. So, to start, I want you to picture this. You are planning a dinner with a friend for this coming Friday.
Sounds great.
Yeah. And the process starts out simple enough, right? A restaurant reservation confirmation hits your email inbox.
Right. The classic starting point.
Exactly. So, you see the time. You open your calendar app, and you block out the evening so you don't accidentally double book yourself.
Which means your single Friday night is now already living in two completely disconnected pieces of software.
Right.
I mean, the calendar app has absolutely no idea the email exists, and the email client doesn't care about your schedule.
Exactly. And the fragmentation is really just getting started there.
Oh, yeah.
Because let's say you remember that in recent conversation in your messaging app, this friend mentioned a new food allergy.
Oh, yeah. You've got to keep track of that.
All right. So you make a mental note.
Mm-hmm.
And then you remember their birthday happens to be coming up. So you jump over to like a task management app and you add buy a birthday gift to a to-do list.
Another app.
Yep. And then the dinner actually happens. You have a great time. You snap a photo of the two of you. And that image gets filed away into your phone's just sprawling camera roll.
So that is one single evening, right? But it's now scattered across five entirely different digital silos.
Five of them, just holding the memory of this one night.
Yeah.
And I mean, if you've ever spent 10 minutes just frantically searching your texts and your emails and your notes just to piece together a single plan, you know exactly what this friction feels like.
It's exhausting.
It really is.
Mm-hmm.
So today we are exploring a newly published essay, mm-hmm. dated today, actually, September 5th, 2026. It's by Tharun Puduru, and he is the founder of Rito, which is a digital tool that's currently in development.
Right. And I think it's important to note that our mission with the source material isn't just to, like, look at a new app.
Yeah, totally.
It's to dissect the underlying philosophy of why the way we currently organize our digital lives is structurally broken.
Yeah. And the dinner scenario the author uses in the essay, it's so vital because it isolates the core mechanical failure of modern productivity tools.
Exactly. Because if you think about it, every single app you just mentioned did its specific job flawlessly.
Right. The calendar tracked the time.
Yeah.
The task list tracked the chore.
Right. But because the software industry designs these tools as isolated containers, they create this massive, invisible secondary job for the user.
You essentially become a human API.
Yes.
You are the biological glue that's just forced to keep all these distinct connections together in your own head.
And the consequence of that invisible labor is a huge drain on your mental energy.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, we have spent the last three decades getting incredibly good at saving raw information, right? A confirmation code, a receipt, a passing thought.
But the software is only capturing the data, not the context.
Exactly. Without the relationships between those pieces of data explicitly built into the tools, you are the one who's forced to reconstruct the whole picture from scratch every single time you need it.
It's so much work. And, you know, the history of how we got here is actually kind of fascinating to me.
Oh, yeah, the physical office thing.
Right. If you think about it, the reason our apps work this way is because early software designers literally just copied the physical office.
Right. We have files. We have folders, desktops.
Yeah. All based on a physical hierarchy. So we end up treating digital information like an actual piece of paper.
Yeah, which is so limiting.
It is. Because if you put a piece of paper in the receipts folder, it physically cannot also be in the Friday dinner folder or the friend's birthday folder. Okay. It's trapped in one location.
Right. The physical constraints of the 1980s office basically dictated the digital architecture we still use today.
Exactly.
And that hierarchical file system, it forces you to strip away context. So a task in your to-do list that just says buy a gift, it becomes this sterile, isolated text string.
It really does.
It loses its meaning the moment you separate it from the person, the occasion, and the specific dinner plan.
Yeah, and Vrito's foundational thesis is that this hierarchical model is just fundamentally the wrong shape for human life.
So the goal is to shift from a hierarchical model to a relational one.
Right. Instead of dropping a static file into an isolated folder, Vrito's approach, it feels more like putting a pin on a digital map.
Oh, I like that analogy.
Yeah. You can draw strings from that specific pin to a person, a date, or a project, and then view that entire web of connections from any angle you want.
That is a highly accurate way to visualize relational data architecture. The essay argues that the relationships between things deserve a primary place in our software, not just the things themselves.
Right, they're just as important.
Exactly. What's happening under the hood is this shift toward object-oriented personal data. So in Rideau's proposed design, a person isn't just a word typed into a text file.
Yeah.
And a dinner isn't just a calendar block. They are distinct entities that can natively hold connections to each other.
Which is wild. The practical application of that sounds entirely different from how we operate today.
It really is.
Let's trace that Friday dinner through this relational lens, just to give a clear picture.
Okay, yeah. So the author asks us to imagine opening that same Friday dinner plan inside Rideau.
Okay.
Instead of hunting across 5 apps, you see all the relevant pieces gathered in a unified view. The entity of the person you are meeting is linked to the event.
Nice.
The entity of the restaurant is there, holding the reservation details. And that task reminding you to pick up the gift is attached directly to the dinner, along with the note about their food allergy.
So because the software actually understands how these pieces relate to one another, the context is preserved automatically.
Exactly.
And depending on what you need in a specific moment, your entry point just changes.
Precisely. Like, if you are rushing to the dinner, your entry point is probably the calendar event, so you can quickly tap the restaurant address.
Right. Makes sense.
But a month later, if you are trying to remember the name of that great place you both liked, you aren't forced to just scroll chronologically through a calendar.
Oh, thank goodness.
Right. You can find the restaurant through the person's profile or through the photo you attached to the event. Tasks, dates, people, places, and notes, they all maintain their own distinct structures, but they live in this connected web that preserves the bigger picture.
And the essay makes a point to expand this logic beyond just casual dinners.
Right.
Dinners are a great entry point because they're universally understood. But the structural problem applies to heavy-duty logistics, too.
Oh, absolutely.
Think about planning a major vacation. You're dealing with flight bookings, hotel confirmations, a daily itinerary, rental car agreements, a running budget.
It's a lot.
Or consider a complex work project. You have key decisions made in a Tuesday meeting. You've got cascading deadlines and specific deliverables tied to specific colleagues.
Yeah, human life is constantly generating these really dense interconnected webs.
But yet, our current operating systems demand that you take a machete to those webs.
Yeah, just chopping them up.
Exactly. Chopping them up into disconnected pieces just to satisfy the limitations of the separate applications.
Which is why the essay argues a true personal organizer should be designed to respect and maintain the structural integrity of your life's information.
Okay, wait. I have to stop you there because this honestly sounds exhausting.
Uh-oh. How so?
Well, if the entire premise of this tool is that I need to build a massive, interconnected web of every person, project, task, and dinner in my life, I'm out.
Fair enough.
I mean, I am not spending an entire weekend manually tagging entries and drawing digital strings between every receipt and calendar invite I'd ever generated.
Yeah, nobody wants to do that.
Productivity systems usually fail because they demand an all or nothing approach, you know?
Right, where you have to migrate your entire digital existence before the system offers any actual utility.
Exactly. So how does this avoid that trap?
Well, the hesitation you're feeling is exactly why most complex organizational tools have terrible retention rates.
Right.
The friction of onboarding is just too high. And the founder explicitly addresses this trap in the essay. Rideau's philosophy is anchored on the principle of progressive enhancement.
Progressive enhancement? What does that actually mean?
What the author simply calls starting small.
Yeah.
The system is specifically engineered so that you do not have to document your entire existence for the tool to be helpful.
Okay, but how does the software actually prevent that manual tagging fatigue?
Yeah.
How do you have a deeply connected system that doesn't demand you connect everything at once?
The technical answer lies in how Rideau treats different data types. Current note-taking apps usually treat everything as plain text, right?
Yeah, mostly.
So you have to invent your own formatting and tagging rules, which is where the exhaustion comes from. Rideau, however, gives different subjects their own native appropriate structure out of the box.
Meaning the software already knows what a calendar event is versus what a receipt is?
Yes. A calendar event inherently requires a time and date. A receipt naturally requires a monetary amount.
Right.
And the essay explicitly points out that a person deserves a lot more nuance than just being treated as a checkbox on a task list.
Yeah, I would hope so.
By giving these entities their own specific structure from day one, they are immediately useful on their own. You can jot down a task simply as a task. It functions perfectly well in isolation.
So I don't have to build the whole web on day one.
You don't have to build it at all until you want to. You might use the tool just to keep track of a few key restaurants you want to try, or to maintain notes on three specific clients you really want to stay in touch with.
Okay.
The tool is functional at that micro level. But later, when you are ready, you can simply link that isolated task to the project or the person that explains why you're doing it.
Okay, that makes a lot more sense. I can start with the specific friction points in my life, like the plans I always lose track of or the meeting notes I can never find. And I only add another area of my life to the system when the utility of doing so actually outweighs the effort.
Right, so the connections grow organically rather than being this massive data entry chore on a Sunday afternoon.
The architecture is designed to scale with your comfort level, basically.
Yeah, it respects your time by allowing isolated utility, but it offers relational power whenever you choose to engage it.
But, okay, let's say I do start engaging that relational power.
Okay.
And I successfully build this incredibly rich, interconnected web of my personal context.
Yeah.
In my routines, my health, my money, the people I care about most.
Right.
That naturally brings us to what I think is the most critical concern in modern tech.
The AI question.
Yes. If I build this massive honeypot of personal data, aren't I just creating the ultimate feeding ground for an AI to scrape? Because that sounds like an absolute privacy nightmare.
Oh, for sure. And the essay leans into that exact tension.
Yeah.
Because the modern tech landscape has normalized a very specific, aggressive rollout of artificial intelligence, it's usually mandated by default, running constantly in the background, ingesting all available user data across the entire operating system.
Right, either to train itself or ostensibly to personalize your experience.
Exactly, whether you consented to it or not.
Often buried in a sprawling terms of service agreement that nobody reads.
Yep. But when dealing with a tool designed to hold the actual context of a user's life, that broad spectrum scraping approach is unacceptable.
I would agree.
So the author establishes a very hard philosophical boundary in the essay, and the quote is, "Intelligence should begin with permission."
Okay, that sounds great as a marketing slogan, but what is the actual mechanism? I mean, how does a piece of software enforce that boundary?
Well, it requires acknowledging a fundamental trade-off. Ooh. A connected web of information absolutely makes an AI assistant more capable. If an assistant actually understands the relationship between your schedule, your location, and your tasks, it can genuinely anticipate what needs your attention. But because that data is so intimate, Frito's architecture treats AI as strictly optional.
Okay.
You can organize your records, map your relationships, and use the entire relational database without ever once activating an AI feature.
Okay, but let's say I want to help. Like, I want an assistant to look at my schedule and figure out the logistics of this Friday dinner.
Sure.
How do I get that utility without giving it the keys to the entire database?
This is where the concept of the relational map actually protects you. If you choose to use Vrito's built-in assistant, which the essay refers to as Sa'ai,
right.
Or even if you connect a compatible external assistant, the access is not granted through a universal toggle. It is controlled via granular node-level permissions.
Node-level. So meaning I am controlling access to specific pins on the map,
yeah,
rather than just handing over the whole map itself.
Exactly. The mechanics of it ensure that asking the assistant for help with one area leaves you in complete control of its access to everything else.
So if I ask Sa'ai to parse my calendar to find a free evening for that dinner, I am granting it temporary access just to the calendar entity.
Yes. That technical permission does not allow the AI to laterally access your private journal entries or scan your financial projects or analyze the historical relationship data you've saved about that friend.
Wow. Okay. That operates completely differently from the industry standard.
It really does.
Because instead of an AI acting like a landlord that suddenly owns the entire building and has a master key to every apartment, the AI in this philosophy is treated more like a guest.
That's a great way to put it.
Yeah, you invite it into a specific room for a specific chore, and it physically cannot open the door to the hallway.
That analogy perfectly captures the architectural intent, I think. And there is a secondary mechanism detailed in the essay regarding transparency. Even when the AI is granted permission to a specific room, it does not have unilateral authority to alter the furniture.
Wait, what do you mean?
So if the assistant analyzes your calendar and proposes a change, perhaps suggesting a new task, drafting an email, or adjusting a timeline, it cannot silently execute that change in the background.
Oh, that's huge.
Right. The user must be able to clearly see what the AI generated and actively decide if that information belongs in their permanent records. you retain the role of the final editor of your own life's data.
So it forces the AI to show its work and literally ask for a signature before anything is committed to the database.
Exactly.
That level of friction is actually a feature, not a bug.
Yeah.
Especially when we're talking about maintaining the integrity of personal records.
It proves that a platform can respect user privacy and data sovereignty while still offering the advanced utility of modern machine learning.
Yeah.
The two concepts do not have to be mutually exclusive if the architecture is built correctly from day one.
Wow. So synthesizing everything we've covered so far, the invisible labor of acting as a human API, the shift from legacy hierarchical folders to a relational digital map, the progressive onboarding that prevents tagging fatigue, and these strict granular boundaries placed around artificial intelligence.
It's a lot to take in.
It is, but the essay makes a really compelling case for the mechanics of this system. But I noticed toward the end of the piece, the author shifts the focus to the psychological impact of all this.
Yeah, it takes a really interesting turn there, because the ultimate purpose of a personal organizer shouldn't merely be the cold practical execution of daily chores.
Right.
It must account for the human experience. So think back to the Friday dinner that started this whole discussion. The planning takes effort, the Friday night arrives, the dinner happens, and then the time slot expires on your active calendar.
Right, and in almost every productivity app on the market, the moment that event passes, it becomes dead data.
Exactly.
It gets archived, grayed out, or just deleted entirely.
Mm-hmm.
The software considers the job done.
The software considers it done, but the essay points out a really profound truth about human nature. Just because the dinner is over doesn't mean it has stopped mattering.
Yeah, that's so true.
The practical plans of today become the lived experiences of tomorrow. And those experiences ultimately form our memories.
The software shouldn't kill the data just because the clock struck midnight.
By maintaining the relational web, those connections stay alive. The photos you took at the table, the specific restaurant you chose, the detail about the food allergy you wanted to be mindful of.
They don't just get scattered into the digital void?
No, they remain permanently tethered to your shared history with that friend. So when you sit down to plan the next evening together, you know, maybe 6 months later, the software doesn't just offer you a blank slate.
It offers you the context of your relationship.
Exactly. It turns an organizer from a simple chore completion engine into a tool for actually remembering a good night.
It treats your data as the narrative of your life rather than just an endless assembly line of tasks to be checked off.
It really does.
Now, I want to be incredibly clear with you about the current reality of this tool. Rito is not something you can go download from an app store today.
Right. Very important to note.
As the essay explicitly states, they are currently in the phase of preparing for launch. What we are analyzing today is a public statement of purpose. It is the intellectual groundwork and the guiding philosophy dictating how they're building the software.
They are thoroughly diagnosing the disease of digital fragmentation and proposing a structural cure long before the product hits the open market.
Yeah.
They are committing publicly to the idea that the important parts of life deserve a connected, private place.
And understanding that diagnosis, I think it really changes how you look at the screens you tap on every day. Which leaves us with a final thought I want to offer you today.
Okay.
We spent this time analyzing the sheer amount of cognitive effort required to simply orchestrate a dinner across 5 isolated apps, but scale that mechanical friction across an entire lifetime.
That's a huge scale.
It is. If the digital tools we rely on every single day constantly force us to artificially compartmentalize our reality, you know, forcing our events into one silo, our tasks into another, and stripping the context from our relationships, how has that relentless daily fragmentation subtly changed the way we actually experience, process, and ultimately remember the story of our own lives?
It's a great question, because if the tools we use define how we record our personal history, relying on fragmented tools practically guarantees a fragmented history.
It really is something to seriously think about the next time you find yourself copying and pasting a Zoom link between 3 different applications just to keep a simple plan from falling apart. That is all for today's deep dive. We'll see you next time.